City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
This is Kim Hughes and Friends. City Talk 105.9.
City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Welcome to the first ever Kim and Friends stroke City Talk 105.9 stroke Wine Club. Mike Wynn joins me. This is our podcast, Mike, so it's going to be going out on our website. If you're listening now, you're listening to us online, which you can do around the globe. Welcome to the City Talk 105.9 website. Mike is one half of our wine expert team, and he kicked off this weekend our City Talk Wine Club. Mike, I just thought it would be a good opportunity for us to get to know a little bit more about you. So how did you get into wine?
Well, it's not my profession. I originally trained as a surveyor, but I met a gentleman called David Scatchard, who was a famous wine merchant in Liverpool, and he was the first man to really introduce Spanish wines, proper Spanish wines, to the UK. Names that people would be familiar with, Campo Viejo, Las Campanas, he introduced those, Federico Paternina wines, and in fact, it also introduced San Miguel beer. So he was quite a founder of information, really, on wine. And he was one of the first Grand Masters of wine to be appointed by the Spanish court.
Wow.
And a fascinating guy. Still alive, still keep in touch with him. And in fact, I had the pleasure...
Is he still into his wine?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it keeps him going. But he gave me a selection of wines to taste. In those days, many years ago, he used to go to old country houses that were being sold, and people would buy the furniture, but David would buy the wine cellar. And it was for nothing, really. And he got some incredible wines. Anyway, he gave me a selection of wines.
So, sorry to interrupt, but sure. But you were so you liked wine, and you got to know him through going in the shop, did you?
He was a friend of my father's. They were great, right. Great friends. And my dad just took me along one day, and Dave and I just hit it off. We really did. It was a friendship to start with. I carried on with my career, but kept in touch with him. And as I say, he gave me some wines to taste, told me to. As we've done today, what do you think of them? Give your honest opinion. Just what's the first? If you don't like them, say you don't like them. And that started a little bit of a love affair with wine, I suppose you could say. And he persuaded me a few years on to make a note of where I was, a little book, where I was, what the wine was, what its colour, nose and palate was.
So brief description. Like when you're in a restaurant or something?
Yeah, I do it now. Now I'm up to volume 60. I've been doing that for 20-odd years. And I should do something with it. People said you should write a book or something like that. And I probably will at some stage.
So you've got books that you've been writing for 20 years. So you could go back 20 years and see a restaurant where you were or at a friend's house or something and see the wine that you had and what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. David used to pull a trick. Ian will tell you when you see him next week that they used to say to David, oh, what about this wine? He said, oh, I'll just let me have a think about it. And he'd phone me up and say, listen, you and I drank this wine in 1996, what was it? I'd tell him all about it. And he'd go back, give a verbatim sort of description of the wine. But it was my notes. And Ian's only found out quite recently that David did this stunt. He used me, which I think is rather nice. And in fact, when he retired, the luncheon we went to, he mentioned that I was a great inspiration to him, that the only person he'd known who actually followed his advice and actually kept a record of notes and notes of wine. So I was very complimented by that. And that started Love Affair, and he introduced me to two great Spanish winemakers, Miguel Torres and Pedro Oliveiro. And I just got to know. So frequently, as you well know, I go to Spain, I visit bodegas, and it's just an ongoing love affair. Not a lush, just, you know. In fact, now I've been in the wine trade. I mean, when I got, as I said to you before, I was in construction. So when I got out of that a couple of years ago, Ian asked me to join him and help him in Purple Wine. So being paid for your hobby is wonderful. And I think it's almost like a kid being locked in a sweet factory. But I find I actually drink less now I'm in the trade than I did before. It's probably got so much to go at. You couldn't possibly, I mean, we go to wine tastings, 50 wines. You couldn't possibly drink 50 wines. You just have to taste and sadly spit out. But it's great fun.
What's the best wine that you've ever drunk? Is there one bottle?
I think that sticks out to my mind, again with David, we, before he retired, we instigated a little club where six or seven of us all took along an old bottle of wine. And one of the wines was a mid-50s Spanish Rioja that shouldn't have been any good. It should have been absolutely diabolical, and it was stunning. I mean, we opened it, had to drink it quickly because the air gets to it, but it was absolutely fantastic. And it was a Federico Paternina Banda Azul, which means blue band, from Rioja. Absolutely brilliant wine. And at a similar tasting with him, we drank a bottle of Cristal Champagne 1923 that had gone a bit. But I didn't know this until then. If it's gone a bit flat, you add a new champagne to it, it revitalises it. It's absolutely stunning.
So wait, so you with the Cristal, you added a new Cristal or just
new,
any champagne?
Well, a new decent champagne. It wasn't a Cristal. Goodness. And it just revitalises it. Now, I didn't know. I mean, there's people better qualified than I can comment on that because I'm not a great expert on champagne. But it was super. But I think in terms of drinking wines, you know, that's a memorable thing. And the Rioja was. And the other thing is, last November I visited Jerez, which is near Seville. And a bodega we deal with at the Sherry's called Hidalgo, a couple of hundred years old. I met the great-great-grandson. And I drank a 100-year-old Amontillado, which is a sort of dryish. Just stunning. Absolutely fantastic. And it's those little incidents that you can't repeat. They're just so great. And, of course, they're all recorded in my little book, so I know.
How lovely. What a brilliant. You should do something with them, actually, Mike. So tell us about our wine of the week that we launched the wine club with this evening. Tell us exactly what it is and a little bit more about it.
Well, the wine we launched this week is called Las Condes, and it's a Cabernet Sauvignon rosé. And the Cabernet Sauvignon is predominantly a red grape, making red wine. It's 2007. It's not terribly old. And the wine is made to be drunk fairly quickly. We talked before about the percentages. It's 13% proof. So it gives a full round wine. And it's made in the Rapel Valley, which is a lovely, lovely part of Chile. Great for growing whites, light reds, and rosés, of course. And really, what was interesting to me that without prompting, all the girls and your good self got all the right things out of it. I mean, I probably made you think about it and taste things that you wouldn't have done normally.
Well, normally you just open a bottle of wine and have a drink.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I wanted to do, and what we want to do on this series of programmes, is make the experience much more enjoyable, so you know what you're tasting. And, I mean, a wine waiter or a sommelier, as they say, will come along and tell you, oh, recommend this wine, recommend that. I mean, I want to empower you with enough knowledge, Ian and I do, that you can make some decisions on your own, and wines that suit your palate. I made the comment before that everybody's different. Everyone's got a different palate, a different taste. I mean, not every lady likes white or rosé wines. We had Jill before who likes red.
Yeah.
You know, who likes a Rioja, which is a big, beefy wine. So it's to empower.
See, I like red wine.
Well, excellent.
And I wouldn't, it's funny, isn't it? I wouldn't, I would drink red wine with a dinner. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't open a bottle of red wine and just have a glass of it because I like quite a heavy red wine.
Yeah.
So I would drink a white wine for that. I've always got a couple of bottles of white wine in the fridge.
Well done.
But there's nothing lovelier than having a really nice red with a big meal. It's like an occasion.
I think it is, yeah. And I think you've made the point at an occasion. There's a lot of mystique about wine, which is unnecessary. Broadly speaking, the benchmark is if you pay a reasonable price, you get a reasonable wine. A couple of weeks ago, we did the thing in the papers and the Telegraph about the difference. And Decanter magazine had said, if you're taking a wine to a party, pay around about £6.99, £7, which came as a great surprise to people. If you remember, I came along with a wine that cost £6.99 and one that cost £25. And you, Phil, and I tasted this. And the wine that was £6.99 was a favourite. Mm. It happened to be a Malbec from Latin America, from Argentina. And the other one was a Pinot Noir, a classical red wine from New Zealand. And it just shows, I mean, we were all brutally honest about the taste that day. I tasted this as well, and I went for the cheaper wine. It appealed to me. So you shouldn't be sort of feel embarrassed about expressing your own opinion. And people do. They seem to be intimidated when they go out. And you shouldn't be. I mean, you're paying it, for heaven's sake. You're buying it.
When you do go out to a restaurant, it's a good thing to bring up, actually. And you're handed a wine list, or you get your hands on the wine list. Are there any kind of good tips that you can give us if you really don't know what you're looking for, but you don't want to go for the house? What could you look for?
Well, I think, first of all, your budget has got to be predominant. And I'm constantly surprised by the markup of wine in this country. If you go to Spain, Italy and France, they charge about 1.5 times the cost of wine. Here, it's 3 and 4 times, which, that's another subject for another day. But your budget is important. And obviously, you're going to select whether you like red, white or rosé. So, you know, you're paring it down then. And If you recognise a country or recognise a grape, and hopefully by the end of this course we'll have given you enough information to recognise grapes, because the grapes span so many countries. I mean, the Cabernet Sauvignon here we're drinking, it could equally come from Italy, France, Germany, Latin America, we said New Zealand, probably more, you know, the more hotter countries. The grape does change its complexion, its flavour, wherever it's grown. A hotter country is more intense. So if you're Southern Hemisphere, if you're sort of New Zealand wines, they're going to be quite acidy, quite sharpish, because it's a cold climate. If you're looking about Northern Spain, Middle Spain, in fact, it's going to be big, beefy reds. Latin America, Argentina, for instance, I mentioned Malbec. Malbec used to be a famous grape grown in southern France. It's taken off in Argentina. They make fabulous wines, really intense. That, as you said, you referred to having a nice wine with a meal. Not a desperately expensive wine. And I'd say the wine at the moment for me is Malbec. So there's a little tip on your wine list. But don't go. The guy says, oh, we can recommend this wine. They're going to be pushing stuff they either can't get rid of or they get a huge markup on. Forgive my cynicism, but that's the way I look. And if you were to dine in particularly Italy, France and Spain, the house wine would reflect the restaurant. A good restaurateur has a fantastic house wine to complement his menu. And that's always a good measure. And I wouldn't go, I never go for extremely expensive wines in a restaurant. If I'm opening a claret or a Rioja, it's got to be opened gently, allowed to breathe at least for half an hour, maybe an hour. Now, you're going into a restaurant, they're not going to breathe it for an hour. It's stuck in a cellar somewhere, probably the wrong temperature. And they say, oh, you're paying for corkage. You know, I can't, there's very few restaurants I know have the proper dehumidification and the right sort of temperature control
well,
for
good
wines.
Tip.
So don't go for the most expensive. I mean, people love to pose, to be blunt. You know, let me be honest with you. Oh, you know, I'll do this. You're not, you're kidding yourself. You really are kidding yourself. A really expensive wine. If you were to cook for your husband a lovely dinner at home, buy an expensive bottle of wine, open it before, and it just changes its character. I mean, you go to a restaurant, comes over with the wine, pops the cork out, and you're drinking it right away. It could be anything. I mean, an expensive wine isn't doing any value to itself by being opened and drunk right away.
Okay, so back to our wine of the week this week, just to finish then. Now is your opportunity to tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, I was very impressed. I mean, just let me... I only had a little bit, honestly. Honestly.
Have another taste.
I just think... I'm being a man, obviously, I love a sort of heavier wine. And this, to me, isn't exactly heavy, but it's got a lot of body in it. It's a proper wine. Hmm. I mean, some rosés are terribly thin.
Would you say viscous in the wine world?
Yes, it is. Absolutely, okay. Yeah. Why not? Absolutely. I mean, you know when you... I've said to you before, when you swirl it round in the glass, you'll see a little residue. It's called legs, and it shows you the strength of the wine. A little bit of running down the side of the glass. That's the viscosity. And it's reflected in the strength of the wine. But it shows it's a great bodied wine. It's a proper wine. It's not a compromise wine. A lot of people thought rosés were compromise. They're not. They're a great, great wine, particularly when you get to this strength and this grape. The grape is a super grape. Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a fabulous grape.
Interestingly for me, because we were talking on the show about the temperature and of when you drink, how you drink your wine, and you were saying that, you know, some rosés actually would drink better if they weren't as cold. And I think certainly for this rosé, we've had it out of the fridge now for quite a while.
Yeah.
We've finished the show. We're now talking on our podcast. And actually, I think those berry aromas and flavours have come out more as the wine's warmed up.
They have. I mean, the wine growers will recommend somewhere between 10, 12, 14 degrees C for wines. But you're quite right. I mentioned to you before, we did have it cold, quite right. And it does disguise the taste of wines and the smell of wines. You're absolutely right. It's opened up. And in fact, if I was having rosé in a restaurant, I wouldn't want the ice bucket. If it came out to me cold, I'd want it to warm up. And it's actually throwing out flavours, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, it really is. If it was a cartoon, it'd be popping out of the top of the glass. And I think that's... And now it's easier for you to smell.
To pick up,
I mean,
on those.
When I was saying sort of the softer end of the fruit, the strawberry, raspberry type flavour, it's overpowering that, actually, isn't it?
It is.
Which it should be, really, because, you know, the sort of Cabernet Sauvignon grape does really warrant that kind of, nose. I mean, I'm just looking. I've got some little notes here myself. Cabernet Sauvignon, the classical varietal means the grape, okay? Ripe berries, cranberries, blackberries, black currants, and the bouquet can be cedary, woody, truffly, leather. That's it, the red wine. Now, bear in mind, we've got a wine that has only been done for a couple of days on that. So it's bordering towards that. You've got all those fruits coming out. And in fact, that to me is one of the nicest rosés I've drunk for a long time. I mean, we'll hopefully at some stage we'll talk about, well, when we talk about Spanish wines, we'll talk about some Spanish roses. Yeah. And I said earlier about Las Campanas from Navarra, which was Ernest Hemingway's favourite wine. And that really is. I mean, this is very comparable to it. And from Argentina, Malbec, there's a rosé that they do that we've got on the list, which Ian and I might well put on.
Okay.
But,
lovely.
You know, I'm anxious to do a repeat just to give you, empower you. I mean, that sounds awful, that, but not to be afraid. I mean, at the end of this, if people have listened to what we've got to say in really simple, easy to use terms, they'll have a great basic knowledge of wine, and we'll have actually probably more knowledge than some of the people who are serving them wines in restaurants.
And we love that. Well, Mike, thank you very much for talking to us online for the very first time. We will continue to do this. And don't forget to check out on the website, exactly where you are right now, more about our wine club. So there you go. That's it. The very first wine club podcast. Should we say over and out, Mike?
Well, we could. Can I say what a great pleasure it's been? It's fun for me. It really is great fun. I mean, you know, I have a passion about wine, and to be able to tell other people about it is great.
Well, you certainly have caught an audience here on Kim and Friends, I tell you. Did somebody say wine? Thanks very much, Mike.
Listen and log on to the Voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.